confirmation of Chazal that they were seeing it. So Maimonides looks at these sentences. Well, I take Nachmanides first, the Ramban. Nachmanides looks at Genesis chapter 2, verse 7. Hashem took dirt from the ground, formed Adam from dust of the ground, blew into his nose the neshama, and man became to a living being. And on that word two, the Lamed, is where we have these two pages of commentary that I mentioned a moment ago. And Nachmanides says the following: it may be, make it clear, it may be, not definite, it may be that Adam went through the stages of the soul of a plant, the soul of a fish, the soul, you can read it in English or the Hebrew. If you don't know Hebrew, you can read it in English. The soul of a plant, the soul of a fish, the soul of a land animal, and then God put the neshama into this being, and this being, who know, any Hebrew speakers here? No? Not a one? Nefach le'ish. What does it mean? Nefach le'ish. Into a man. But that's not quite what he says. Nefach le'ish acher. Ah, that's a little different, huh? What does that mean? Yeah. Changed into, now Nachmanides wasn't casual in his wording. Changed into ish acher, into another man, which means before the neshama there was man. It just wasn't human. The transition is from man to human. It's from verse 26 to verse 27, from Adam to Eta Adam. Nefach le'ish acher. Changed to another man. But what does that sound like? Soul of a plant, soul of a fish, soul of a land animal, then you get humans. What does that sound like? Yeah, but get it chronologically correct. Evolution sounds like Nachmanides. Not Nachmanides sound, I have. Not Nachmanides has by two. Well, like Lecha. It's Lecha Mishnah, which is safe. yeah, it's like Maya Mishnah. That's, yeah. Evolution sounds like Nachmanides. But I would call it development, because how you can evolve light beams into Adam or the Adam is anyone's guess, but I sure don't have an answer, nor does anyone else. How light beams of the creation became Adam, that's the real bizarre aspect. Forget about monkeys. Water, I mean, your light beams that are condensed, rocks in water. So Nachmanides says this, but he didn't pull this out of the air. He learned it, of course, from Maimonides about 50 years earlier. In the Guide for the Perplexed, on the word Yalid, Yalid means to give birth. It's part 1, chapter 7 of the Guide for the Perplexed. Maimonides, in the Guide for the Perplexed, says that it's well known, well, I don't want to get into all of it, because just a simple part, that there were beings around at the time of Adam. Adam had sexual relations with them. These beings probably predated Adam also, because at the time of Adam they were big enough to have relations. We learned that from chapter 4 and chapter 5. So you learn that midrash of Adam. If you look at the end of chapter 4 and the beginning of chapter 5, it is, how many young people are present? Can I speak it? You have to tell me, can I say it? Your son is here? Maybe don't listen. Okay, cover him. In any event, at the end of chapter 4, it's at the end of chapter 4, verse 25, it says Adam knew his wife again to have a kid named Seth. Beginning of chapter 5, it says it's 130 years between Cain and Abel and Seth. So why are there two statements about the birth of Seth, the third kid? Well, the Talmud in Eruvim zeroes in on the again. Adam knew his wife again, Ayin Vavdalet Od. Why does it say again? It's his wife. You learned that from chapter 5, because for 130 years they separated. Well, that's not surprising. You know, one kid kills another, they ate the forbidden fruit and break up any family, and broke up them apparently. But they got back together. Talmud talks about it. They got back together after 130 years, but in those 130 years, Adam was siring other beings. Okay? The Talmud talks about it. The beings, the Radak says, were banim mamash, actual children. They just weren't human. Wait a minute, why weren't they human? Because Adam was having relations, not with Eve, but with these other beings that were around. Now, Adam talked with God, okay? So, you know, Adam wasn't giving birth. The other beings were giving, I mean, let's be reasonable, you know? I mean, Adam was a man, so he wasn't giving birth. But he was siring these other beings, which the Talmud calls demons, and there's a whole discussion about it, but it's, you know, it's very circumspect in its wording. The Radak says these were actual children, they just weren't human. Maimonides describes them. Maimonides says it's well known that there are two kinds of parents. There's the biological parent, and there's the sociological parent. Pretty clever for almost 1,000 years ago, because we say that exactly today. That there's a sociological parent, like the teacher, or if a child is taken away and raised by other parents, there's a sociological parent. And then he says, these beings that Adam was siring, it is well known, he says, that these beings with whom he was having relations were exactly human in shape and in brains. He uses, in English, there are four adjectives. Shape, form, intelligence, and judgment. The same shape and the same intelligence. Dummies they weren't. I mean, Adam was not going to have relations with a dummy. You know, he had certain less standards. No, it's not a joke. He talked with God. Adam talked with God. It's not. I'm saying seriously. Maimonides describes them. They had the same shape and intelligence as humans. Well, wait a minute. If you've got the same shape and the same intelligence, you're not human. What else do you need? The neshama. Yeah, that's the whole difference. The transition is the neshama. And that's where Nachmanides, who didn't get the information from the local museum, nor did Maimonides, it's in the text. If you read the sentences carefully, it's in the text. That, in fact, these beings existed, as the Tiferet Yisrael was completely correct. Thank God, they finally found the fossils that show that indeed these transitions took place. The question is, there's no clue as how the transition took place. The creation of the neshama is fine, but how you get, I keep repeating it, out of a ball of energy or out of rocks and water, life in the first place, let alone a human with 30 million mutations in 5 million years, that's anyone's guess, and I can guarantee you there's no answer in biology because it's always just pushed under the rug. And you always try to you take the simple questions, but the hard question, of course, the real question is, why is there anything in the first place? I mean, the ultimate question is, why does there exist? Forget energy. Why is there a universe? You know, and why is there existence? That's the basic question. But then you have to, then the more simple question is from energy forward, which there's no answer. So Maimonides comes and gives us this description. Nachmanides says it changes into another type of man. And we see that from the double yud, this double input into humanity. Rosh Hashanah commemorates verse 27, the Adam. God created the Adam. If that's the case, if in fact that is the case, that we see that there was this understanding in the Mishnah, Adnei HaSedeh, the masters of the field, we see that Maimonides talks about them, we see that there's the two yuds and the one yud, for two yuds for humans, one yud for animals, in chapter 2. Is there any hint in the fossil record, or the archaeological record, more recent, the archaeological record of the neshama? Neshamas don't leave fossils, right? It's totally spiritual. But I think the effect of the neshama did leave a fossil. If you look, I say literally, thank God, I had a day off when I was lecturing in London several years ago, long before I thought of writing this book. I went to the British Museum, had a half a day off before the lecture in the evening, and in the British Museum, there's at least these 5 or 6 years ago, there was a room called the Mesopotamian Room. Mesopotamia, where Ur was, the Fertile Crescent. And on the wall of the Mesopotamian Room, there was a plaque, which I just say, thank God, I copied it down word for word. And here's what the plaque said. In the British Museum, which is a bastion of secular understanding, you know, it's not like it has no prejudice in favor of the biblical understanding. And make it clear when I'm reading here, the curators of the British Museum knew that the Tower of Jericho dates back 10,000 years. They knew about farming. You know, they're not dummies. So here's what the plaque said: the earliest cities, the large towns evolved before 5,500 years ago. It's all rounded off. 5,500 years. It sounds interesting. Just about the time of Adam. Interesting. Large towns evolved before 5,500 years ago as local centers. But about this time, there was a sudden change in scale. Then it mentions some of the towns, or 5 kilometers in square kilometers. You know, big cities, in other words, okay? Then it goes on. It says, much the most important innovation of the period, however, was the invention of... Anybody know what was invented about the time of Adam? No. What, the plow? No. Writing. The wheel goes back. Writing. Much most important innovation of the period, however, was the invention of writing. The stimulus for the emergence and development of writing was the need to record economic transactions. See, the nice thing about writing is you know what it's about. The pictures don't tell you anything except the fact that there were horses. Were the horses gods? Were the horses good for supper? Did they ride the horses? Did the horses chase them away? That we don't know. We know pictures of horses. But the writing, you know what the hieroglyphics said, because they've been interpreted, they've been translated. The earliest cities, the most important innovation was writing. The stimulus for the emergence of writing was the need to record economic transactions. with the invention of large cities, with the appearance of large cities, for the first time there was division of labor, not just between men and women, where the men would be hunting, the women would be home, obviously, from difference in strength, but there was a division of labor among groups. One group lived in the city, one group lived on the farm. That's the major division that we learn from this writing. All the early writings are not about, hallelujah, there's a God. That's not what they're about. They're all business. It sounds familiar. The stimulus would be like this. Frank lives on the farm and Sam lives in the city. Frank on the farm grows corn. Sam in the city makes baskets. Sam in the city makes a bunch of baskets, carries 20 baskets out to Frank on the farm. He says, Frank on the farm, you grow corn. I got kids in the city. I got to feed them. You keep 19 of these baskets. I'll take one of the baskets and you fill it with corn. And then you'll pay me for that basket of corn for the other 19 baskets. Frank on the farm says, good deal because I need the baskets. But you know what, Frank? Sam from the city, it's a problem. The corn won't be ripe till next week. You know, leave the baskets out here. You don't have to carry them back to the city. Well, Sam from the city is no dummy. He says, yeah, Frank, that's right. Let's write it out. Frank on the farm owes Sam in the city one basket of corn. The earliest writing is invented because large cities are formed for the first time and the division of labor. The only question that remains is, why were large cities formed at the time of Adam? And this is now, up till now, it's straight archaeology. It's not my idea. It's not no great chiddush. Why do large cities form at the time of Adam? Because the neshama changed the world from an amoral world to a world with moral imprint. Before the neshama, if you didn't look like me, smell like me, and talk like me, we had you for dinner, but not as a guest. You're in the pot. But with the neshama, there was a sudden change. The cannibalistic world changed. As Solzhenitsyn says, wolfhounds are right, cannibals are wrong. With the creation of the neshama, for the first time, clans could live together. People that look totally differently. You know, some guys got beards, some don't. Some women cover their heads. You got the whole kit and caboodle. And you know what? They could live together without eating one another alive. Because the neshama let this happen. And my feeling is that that's the reason that large cities appear. That the neshama is invented. The neshama changed the world from an amoral world to an immoral world. The very essence of Rosh Hashanah in a week and a half from now. The neshama changes the meaning of how you see life. The neshama knows the meaning of the Shema. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. The silver dish reading is, there's one God. But the golden apple is, Hashem Echad. The manifestation of God in this world is the unity that pervades all existence. There's no trick to being spiritual in the synagogue on Rosh Hashanah, on Shabbos, no trick whatsoever. The real trick is when you're online and there's one seat left and there are two people in front of you and you're dead tired from a day's work and you see them as objects and not as humans. That's the Nefesh speaking. Because the Nefesh knows one thing, me, me, me. Get ahead in the line, push him out of the way, tell him there's a fire, whatever, but get that seat. That's what the Nefesh says. You go to the supermarket and you buy this big bag of oranges. And you put the oranges on the scale. And the checkout, it's usually a woman. The checkout woman is so busy, you've got 10 people behind you. They're all pushing their big carts of food. And it's a tabletop scale, not like this kind of a tabletop scale. It feels the pressure. And she takes the bag of oranges and puts them on the scale. And what do you notice? It's such a big bag of oranges that five of the oranges aren't on the scale. They're on the table. Is the scale going to record that weight? No. If you don't tell her about those five oranges, your net worth goes up by five oranges. You're worth more by, it's true, you're worth five oranges. But your self-worth goes down by five oranges. Because you can't kid your neshama. Every act you do, the neshama says, are you moving closer to or further away from this oneness in the world? And that's what Rosh Hashanah is all about. Hayom harat olam, hayom yamid b'mishpat. That's your decision. The neshama, your nefesh and your neshama battle back and forth all the time. And the real test of it isn't while you're meditating on some mountain, contemplating your navel. And then isn't how well you daven. That's all the pumping irons. That's just the pumping the irons. The real battle comes when you're in the supermarket and you got to get ahead in that line. Rosh Hashanah is a big chance to get ahead. Shana Tova. Thank you.
questions here, yeah. Okay. Thank you very much for a most enlightening talk. Really very, I enjoyed it very much. I don't know what to say. It's a ray of light in me. Before we take questions, if you want to think of questions, we will do a few minutes of questions. I just want to make a couple of announcements. If anybody wants to get a tape of the lecture, you can sign up. We will have them available in a short period of time. Also, just to reannounce, anybody wants, if you want to pre-register for the conference in November, you can do it. If you pre-register, lunch is included. You don't have to register now for lunch, but in general. And that's it. If anybody is not on our email list and wants to be, they can sign up now. Now, enough of the boring announcements. Back and the real important stuff, any questions? Maybe add a moment or two to think about it. I think what I'd like to do is take three or four questions at one time. Please make a question, not a statement, under 30 seconds per question, and then we'll have Dr. Schroeder announce to them in the round, if that's okay. If he can remember. Okay. Yes.
Well, should we take one question at a time?
No, a few more. Who got the first?
Okay, who got the first neshama?
Yes, in the back.
What about the B'nai HaNephilim and the Kol Chadash?
Okay, B'nai HaNephilim, probably I can't. Yeah.
Was the former communication
not writing,
but speech, not like
just
communication, but like actual talking? So, what was the form that speech?
Okay. What was the first question? What was the first question? You remember? We'll take one question at a time from now on, because I can't probably remember.
What?
You don't even remember the question. What was?
The
neshama. Okay. Does it? Okay. I don't have an answer. I tell you, I don't have. I know what I think. I do not have a chazal for that, except that Nachmanides does hint, when he talks about Seth, that the reason that Seth had a neshama was because he was raised in the household of Adam and Eve. My guess is as follows, that there's one neshama created, and some people say only all humans have a neshama. There are different levels, etc. I'm not getting into the Jewish neshama. All humans have a neshama. Adam wasn't Jewish, right? Adam was humankind. In fact, Adam was Adam and Eve. In chapter 5 it says that God created them male and female and called their name Adam. It is Adam who names Eve Eve. God does not name Eve Eve. It is Adam who names Eve, the woman Adam. They're both men. I would guess that like one candle lights another. I mean, this is totally my theory, and I don't have any chazal for that other than the Maimonides alludes to the fact that you can inculcate this, that if you had a neshama, you were living next to some people that didn't have a neshama. No, if a person next to you didn't have a neshama, okay, you'd say, you know, kids, go play with that people that they got something going from that we don't have. I would guess it's like one candle lighting another. I think the neshama is such a tool for survival that it would spread. Okay? So then, because the creation of Adam relates to the neshama and not his body. Adam's body is not created other than God creates the heavens and the earth, Genesis chapter 1. Everything else is making. That's unequivocal. So that's my understanding. The neshama doesn't evolve. The neshama is not the product of evolution. It's a creation that's put into the world. Make that clear. Adam does not evolve from a primate. Even though that just sounds like I said it did, right? But it doesn't. The body of Adam may have, although it's a biologically a problem, but not the neshama. Which makes you a human is the neshama. And the idea of talk or speech or whatever, if you let's see, we don't have the unculus here, but if you notice in the text that you have in front of you, that it's on day number 5, we see the word nefesh haya. In fact, it's underlined. In verse number 20, and I have the soul of animals. It's didn't quite Xerox over there. I realize I missed. It's just soul, it's just soul of animals. Nefesh Haya. And Onkelos, the famous translator. The Onkelos is such an important translation to Aramaic, it's called the Targum. Okay? The translation. And it's from Hebrew to Aramaic. It's a sister language. Nefesh Haya, Onkelos translates as Nafsha Chayta. Sounds the same word, right? Because it is the same word. It's Aramaic. Nefesh Haya, Nafsha Chayta. Then you go down to day number 6, right below the dark line that in the Xerox scene came out. It says, Nefesh Haya, for the animals on day number 6. And it says, and the translation is, Nafsha Chayta. Okay? And then you go down the next time. Now that's for the water animals on day 5, Nefesh Haya, Nafsha Chayta. the land animals. Nefesh Chaya means nefesh, a soul. Chaya, a living soul. Or an animal soul, you're going to say it. Nefesh Chaya for the land animals. Nefesh Chaya for the animals on day number 5, day number 6. And then the Nefesh Chaya for Adam doesn't appear till Genesis chapter 2, verse 7, where it says, V'hi Adam l'nefesh chayam. Man became to a living being. L'nefesh chaya. And on that point, the only difference is the Lamed. And it's from the Onkelos, that's about the year 130 or 150, which predates the Mishnah, which predates the Gemara, which predates Maimonides and Nachmanides, and that's how they got this information about changes into another kind of man. The Onkelos says, on nefesh chaya, not l'nefesh chayta, and the only difference is the Lamed. Two. He says, L'ruach mamalala. Nefesh chaya, nafsha chayta. Water animals. Nefesh chaya, nafsha chayta. Land animals. But for humans, L'nefesh chaya, L'ruach mamalala. A speaking spirit. Notice, Monkelis does not say chaya mamalala, a speaking animal. When you are told that the difference between a human and every other animal is speech, you're getting half the story. That is not what the Onkelos says, and that statement is going on the Onkelos when the rabbi tells you, rabbis and tells you that. It's ruach mamalala, spiritual speech. We are not speaking animals, we are speaking spirits. In fact, we are a spirit, the way it's said is, we are spiritual beings having a human experience. We're not humans having a spiritual experience, we are spiritual beings having a human experience. And in fact, that is all of what the major commentators, all the major physicists that worked in quantum mechanics say explicitly, that there is probably no physical world, that the physical world is an illusion. This is not New Age. This goes back to people like Heisenberg, Schrodinger, Planck, the major, James Jean, the major mathematician that worked through quantum mechanics. James Jean, Sir James Jean, mathematician, says, it looks like the world is more like a great thought than a great machine. When the Talmud says we're the idea of God, it means it literally. Schrodinger and Onkelos say, and Heisenberg say it so explicitly, that it appears that the fundamental particles, I'm not going to dig, do I have it out? I put it back in my briefcase, so I'll just say it from memory. It appears, this is Werner, these are Nobel Prize winning people who developed quantum mechanics. Quantum mechanics isn't like there in the corner. Every time you use your shalat, what do they call that, the thing that turns, like opens your car door, the remote, whatever it is, or turns on your TV, or you run a toaster, or you look at your watch, you're using the work of their brains. It's all built on quantum mechanics, all of it. Every transistor, all of it is built on it. So it's not something esoteric. What these people say, what Heisenberg says, that very early in the study of fundamental particles, that we've run into a basic problem, that it appears as if the particles that make up the physical world are not items, I'm using his words now, like stones and flowers, that they're more accurately described as ideas, which is exactly what John Archibald Wheeler said after 90 years of work in physics. He was formerly the president of the American Physics Society, Einstein Award, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. He writes, and when I first started studying, I had the same experience, but on a, the hub deal between him and me. He said, when I first started studying physics, it looked like the world was made up of particles. Protons, neutrons, the ping pong ball model of things going around. But it was made up of particles. Then as I studied more, it became clear that these particles were really expressions of energy. Equals mc squared. And now after a lifetime of study, it becomes clear to me that these particles of energy are really the expression of information. Not that they have a lot of information in them. They are information incarnate, if you want to put it that way. We are the expression of information. That although the world appears physical, it sounds flaky, it sounds new world, but the leading persons in physics today tell us that, in fact, the world out there, here, is more a thought than a reality. And the Torah has been saying this for decades. About 10 years ago, I was giving a talk at the Yeshivat HaKotel, which is near Eish HaTorah in the Old City. And we went to the age of the universe. Evolution was a longer, you can't imagine they stayed awake for a longer talk. I mean, I don't have a chauffeur to wake you up, but what can I do? So they said, okay, evolution, age of the universe, tell us something new that science hasn't yet really hammered down that you think it will be. And it's on the top of your page. My guess is that we're going to eventually discover that although we have this wonderful development of energy, changing into matter, changing into life, changing into mind, to brain, changing into mind, then we're going to find out that this is all physical. This is physical. From here up to here, it's physical. Mind is probably metaphysical, but we don't know because we don't know where mind is. But this is physical. That I said we're going to find that before the energy, there's something totally metaphysical, and it's called wisdom. John Archibald Wheeler, MIT, Ed Franken, Stanford Chang, the University of Vienna, Princeton University, they call it now information. But information are two sides of the same coin. How did the Torah teach this 3,000 years ago? The bizarre English translation that you got, pardon me for saying so, but it's so annoying, that to make words work, the Hebrew was changed. And that's really chutzpah, because the Bible said, Bereshit bara Elohim et ha-shamayim ve'et ha-aretz. This English translation says, in the beginning of God's creating the heavens and the earth. The older translation was, in the beginning, God created. Anyone hear that? In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth? Yeah. The basic problem is on the word Bereshit. If you remove the word Bereshit from the Bible, it says unequivocally, God created the heavens, bara Elohim et ha-shamayim ve'et ha-aretz. The aspect of God called Elohim, manifest, God in manifest in nature, judgment, created the heavens and the earth. So what's the problem with Bereshit? One person says in the beginning of, and therefore changes created into God's creating. Well, God's creating is nowhere in the Hebrew, the English that you have in front of you. It's God created. So why did they change it to God's creating? Because if you use the Hebrew in the simple reading, it reads like that. This, in the beginning of, God created the heavens and the earth. It's a meaningless sentence. In the beginning of what? In the beginning of God created the heavens and the earth. So the famous Rashi on this is that the text should have said Bereshona. Because Bereshona means the beginning, in the beginning. But this says it Bereshit. It's not by chance the text says it. So what's going on here? It's telling you something much deeper. That with something called Reshit, a first cause, God created the heavens and the earth. Bereshit. Using something called Reshit, God created the heavens and the earth. That Reshit is totally metaphysical. So what does it mean? Nachmanides brings it down. Nachmanides says it just exquisitely. Nachmanides quotes the Jerusalem translation. Okay, and he writes like this. The Jerusalem translation is about 2,100 years old. It's the oldest translation. It's from Hebrew to Aramaic. If you will merit, it's an amazing statement. If you will merit and understand the secret of the first word, Reshit, you will know why the Jerusalem translation is B'chachma bara Elohim. With wisdom, God created the heavens and the earth. Wisdom is the substrate of all existence, and that's how we're the idea of God, and that's what John Archibald Wheeler is saying today, they call it information. It comes from Proverbs. Proverbs 8, verse 12 says, Ani Chachma. Not Ani Chacham. Ani Chacham means I am wise. But Ani Chachma says, I am wisdom. So who's speaking here? If I say, I am Yaakov, who's speaking? Yaakov. I am wisdom. Who's speaking? Wisdom. I am wisdom. God made me the first of all God's creations, the beginning of God's ways. It's Mishlei. It's Proverbs number 8. God made me. Who's the me? Wisdom, yeah. God made wisdom the first of God's ways, the beginning of his creations. Wisdom is the first of the creations. You have this thing out, whatever it is, God, which we don't know very much about, this amazing whatever that allowed energy to change into matter. And the first of the creations was wisdom. Pure wisdom. And somehow the wisdom manifests itself as energy. But that energy, see, the energy isn't standing on its own. The energy of the creation is really made of wisdom. And the energy became matter. But we know the matter is made of energy, which is made of wisdom, etc., etc. Always at the base is the wisdom. You get life. But the life is made up of matter, which is really a manifestation of vision, which is wisdom. Always it's wisdom. And that lets us know, see, energy has the wisdom in it. The matter is built of this. It's not like the laws of nature are out there. Nature knows this. Nature is nature. The laws of nature are nature. This stuff is made of something totally metaphysical, which means that's what we are also. We're present at the creation, and you know what? We were present before the Big Bang. The Talmud says it, and it's literally true. We are the idea of God. Physics may be wrong, and the Bible may be wrong, but each time they come together, they somehow have the habit of being proven to be correct. And it looks like that's the case. You still have to have breakfast in the morning. You still have to look two ways to cross the street, because although that speeding car may be just a thought, Your body is also, and it will be. Oh, anyway, so I think I, wait, there was, okay, yeah, yeah. Do you have a question?
We'll take one or two more questions.
Yeah.
I can stay, but.
Over there? Okay, yes, yeah. I've never studied the historical development, but certainly for writing, the Semitic languages are the oldest. The oldest writing is the hieroglyphics, and the oldest alphabetic writing goes back 3,500 years, just before Sinai. It's interesting. Alphabetic writing appears, and the oldest examples of it appear in the Sinai. It's quite interesting. Examples of alphabet writing. Remember, the writing at the time of Adam that I talk about is hieroglyphics, pictographs. So the oldest writing goes back to there. Now, I don't know about spoken language, but written language, there's the example. That would be a language that would lead into Hebrew. It doesn't, for a very small price at the Israel Museum, you can get a big poster which shows how the alphabet developed from, and then how words started. That's the best I can think of. I've never studied alphabet. One more, was a question?
And last question.
Wait, take two more questions, because you had a question. They both had, you had a question for a while. So, okay, ask your question, then you ask your then zero.
In your opinion, is this the level of technology we have not existed before?
You mean because of all these amazing things, like on Easter Island, these amazing statues that stand up? There was levels of technology. I don't think there was... No, I think scientifically we see that there's no evidence. There's no evidence, at least that I'm aware of, that there was deep scientific understanding, and of the universe being particulate and also wave and particles. And if you look at the way our sensory perceptions developed over time, everything that we perceive is particulate. We don't have any perception of the wave aspect of the world. Every interaction we have is particulate. So it sounds, my guess is that the science that we have today is the beginning of, it's increasing, but it's not like it was a big wave before and then it was forgotten. Is it possible? Is it possible all people... I heard okay. In the 1970s, I was already in Israel, so I've only seen the notes of this. First of all, in the 1960s, I heard a lecture by Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik, of blessed memory, when a person asked him, "Is it possible there's life elsewhere in the universe?" Okay, just to put that it was it. And he said he said as far as he understand Joseph Soloveitchik, the giant, as far as I understand the Torah, there's no problem with life existing elsewhere in the universe. That's that aside. Now, is it possible that there might be beings without a neshama? In the 1970s, on Who is a Malach? I was already in Israel, so I only saw the notes from that lecture of Joseph Soloveitchik. The Maimonides School in Brookline, Massachusetts, every Motzei Shabbat would give a lecture. And he said, as far as he could see the world, this is the 1970s, he would think that he could identify two persons that had no neshama, or had buried it. See, it's hard to know. You can be so nefesh-oriented that that spark can be pushed down. But he said Hitler and Idi Amin would be two. That was in the 1970s. Today you might put a few other people more logically onto it. So politically correct would be everyone has a neshama. But if the neshama is related to, let's say, advanced development in civilization, then maybe the existence of a written language might imply, notice that the neshama and writing come at the same time. Is it conceivable that until cultures with writing approached cultures that didn't have writing, that the other cultures did not have a neshama, and then the neshama would spread? It's possible, but it's politically incorrect to say that. One thing that is politically incorrect to say is that if you look at the world, not related to the neshama, but just so that for the men in the group, if you look in the world, all the divine inputs into the world are feminine, all of them. The word Torah is feminine. The word nefesh is feminine. The word neshama is feminine. The word shechina is feminine. And in Proverbs number 3, we're told that God creates the universe with hachma, tevun, and vadat. Hachma is feminine, tevun is feminine, vadat is feminine. My friends, it's taken me 28 years of marriage, and I still haven't learned. Listen to your wife.
With that piece of practical advice, we'll call it an evening. It's a good idea. That's why. Okay. I really want to thank Dr. Shorter for really explaining what he alluded to. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Everything is one. Everything is unity. But you can now have the physical idea of eating if you'd like. We will have a Mariv Minyan in 7-8 minutes upstairs. To everybody, a Ktiva v'Chatima Tova. A good year. Very good. And again, if you want to buy a tape, they're outside. We will get them in a week or so. You can sign up outside.
Well, I see it.
They enjoy.
Well, Dub and Marv in 5 minutes. We'll let people talk, but in 5 minutes, we'll go upstairs
and talk to Marv. Musisz jakoś stygnąć do przodu. No, teraz patrzysz. Proszę, idź z tej strony, tutaj naokoło, z tej strony.